And welcome back to your extended news at noon. Tracy Morgan here with you. And this is the week that we're going to be talking to school districts. And we have offered all the school districts in Butler County their own time. So as we go throughout the next many days, you're going to hear a different school district on a different day. To begin this with us is the Butler Area School District. Dr. Brian White is on the phone with me, of course, the superintendent. Dr. White, thank you so much for being here. I do so appreciate your time.
Thanks, Tracy, and I'm happy to be here and happy to try to provide some answers to folks about how the school year is going to look like.
Well, this seems to be an impossible job. I mean, I'll say it. I mean, it just seems like you're in an impossible position. You don't have easy shoes to fill right now. You're not alone in this. Of course, superintendents across the country, locally, in the county, also trying to do their best. And so I know that you have probably answered endless amount of questions, and I'm about to ask you some more. So let me ask you this before we get into the bulk of what we want to talk about with your reopening plans. I want to ask what's on your heart. If there were all opinions set aside, what is it that you would like the community to know, families to know, what it's like to be in your position or just your heart right now? What's on your heart?
It's not just in my position, and I appreciate the fact that many people are saying that, you know, superintendents are in a tough position, but I think we really all are. Every family is struggling to figure out how to manage your own children. Every business is trying to figure out how to manage their own employees. And school is a major part of that, because if we don't operate normally, it is very, very disruptive to everyone's lives. At the same time, parents, employers, school districts are all really worried about the health of our employees, the health of our students. And what does this all mean, and how do we move forward? You know, when this all started in March, we thought it was going to be a little blip on the radar, maybe an extended spring break. Suddenly that slipped into an entire school year. Then over the course of the summer, things felt a little bit better, and obviously things have been a little bit of an uptick now, so people are very anxious. So in my heart, I'm really excited to see our students because we miss them. I'm really anxious about what the future holds, because the last thing I want to do is ever cause harm to someone's life. So, you know, we're trying to be cautious in what we do. We're trying to be mindful of what we're doing. We don't have perfect solutions to everything. And I believe that ultimately our kids will be very resilient no matter what happens, but we're all going to have to be flexible, because how we start might not be how we finish. This is going to be a year of a lot of change too. And, you know, I really hope that we all keep in mind that the kids in particular can be really affected by all this as well, not just the learning loss, but the relationships that are so important to them to develop as young people with their teachers, with their fellow students, and with their families. There's a lot of anxiety. You know, unfortunately, anytime you turn on the TV, the news, the media, you often are hit with all kinds of imagery. And I know I'm a father. I have three sons, and I often watch the news, and that imagery is very, very powerful. And sometimes they walk in the room and see it, and sometimes they're upset by it. Sometimes they're not. But I think we have to look holistically at what's going on for our children, and each family is going to have to make decisions that are best for them. And
Dr. White, you know, I'm going to interrupt you here, and I don't mean to do that rudely, but I'm thinking of my own kids going back to school, and I'm not going to disclose which school district, just to be fair, but the fact is that they haven't been there yet to see the changes. And so I'm wondering, now at the dinner table, they tell me, yeah, we're fine, we're going to go back. I'm wondering, once they actually get into that physical space where there could be masks or barriers, or they don't get to do what they used to do, if that will then affect them once they get back in that place.
I think you're absolutely correct. I think there's going to be a lot of discussions. You know, when you look at the guidelines from the Pennsylvania Department of Health, and when we talk about lunch in particular, we can take our last masks off at lunch, okay, but we have to sit 6 feet apart. You know, that's going to be a pretty isolating experience to sit a half hour, 6 feet apart from any of your friends. You know, so I don't think anyone should anticipate coming back to normal. You're coming back to school, but it's not going to feel normal.
I was going to ask you this down the road, but I'm just going to ask you this right now. How is the school district planning on helping your students emotionally? I know your focus is education, but you also are there in an emotional role, too. How do you help your students this year?
Well, you know, two groups of people will have the primary role in this. Right out of the gate is obviously our guidance counselors. We have a lot of interaction with individual students, particularly students that exhibit anxiety and things of that nature. We also have a partnership with Glade Run, where they provide in-school therapists to our students. So we're very lucky to have that, and you know, we're looking forward to that being a great support to many of our students. Beyond that, too, our regular classroom teachers really take a great ownership of the social-emotional wellness of our students. They build relationships, they discuss things, and they help students work through things. So I think really having a network of caring adults is really important to address these kinds of things as they present themselves.
Dr. White, for the Butler Area School District, I know it's on the minds of many. What is the contingency plan if, and I say when, you start to see COVID-19 cases at school?
So the Pennsylvania Department of Education just released guidelines on this very issue. And so it's available on their website, but the reaction that the schools are being recommended to take based off positive cases also correlates to what the Pennsylvania Department of Education has put out as the what they're calling the community transmission level. So they have a low, middle, and moderate, and high or substantial level of community transmission. Based on the number of cases that are positive and based on that community transmission level, there are specific guidelines that we're to follow regarding should we close school. We're studying it through, but it does look like it's a pretty clear document.
If you have one case, then the school doesn't shut down. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yes. According to the document that we received yesterday, if there is one positive case within a 14-day period, the school does not close down. We would clean the areas where those students spent time. Public health officials, not the school, public health official staff, would contact those people who are in direct contact and have them quarantine. The school district itself does not quarantine people.
Does that mean everyone that was in that class? Are you changing classes? So does that mean multiple students? What does that mean?
My understanding, and this is a better question for Department of Health than the superintendent of schools, is it would be any individual who was within 6 feet of contact without a mask would be considered exposed.
This just seems like an impossible situation of trying and trying and trying, and yet, you know, parents are thinking, how's that going to work? A lot of our questions today between,
saying, how's that
right?
Work? Because,
I mean, yeah.
What 5-year-old knows exactly which people they're in contact with and when they take off their mask?
Yeah.
Of course, we'll have classless, busless, and things of that nature, but, you know, the state will handle the contact tracing, and they may or may not involve us, depending on what they talk to that family about, and you know, we know. Now, I will say too, they did say if there's a low community transmission rate, and there are 2 to 4 cases in a building or a school, then the recommendation is to close for 3 to 5 days while you clean the building.
If you have cases, if you have multiple cases, even just one case, how do you plan on communicating that? Will you communicate that to parents, to the community, to the public, or do you not have to communicate that?
First, it has to be communicated to us, and we're not always sure it will be. If the Department of Health determines they don't need to contact us for contact tracing, we may not know there was a case. The school is not necessarily informed every time there is a case. The Department of Health determines if we need to know about it based off what their contact tracing leads them to. So, you know, my intent, much like we do with head lice and MRSA and anything else, if we're aware of a communicable disease that's been impacting our school, I think parents would want to know, and I would want to share that. I can't make that promise because I'm just not sure we will know.
Dr. Brian White with the Butler Area School District talking about the reopening of Butler here as we're knocking on the door of it right around the corner. If a student travels, should they quarantine before they come back to school?
I would say yes. It is recommended by the state, and we would encourage them to quarantine, and we will work on a learning plan for them. However, because we've had calls from some folks that said, hey, I know someone who has traveled, and they're not quarantining. The school district does not quarantine people. The state health department does. So that's really a function of them. I don't have the authority to order someone to quarantine.
Temperatures, the temperature cameras, I found that to be very interesting when we did that news story. And of what I understand, the temperature cameras can test up to 30 students per second. Do I have that right?
That is correct.
That's a lot of people per second. And those who have gone through the Butler school system, we know how big the school is and how many kids go there. How do you pull aside the one student who may have a temperature with that many people rolling through at the same time?
Yeah, so there'll be staff members there to discreetly wave someone over to say, I need to talk to you, and then pull them over to go get their temperature checked a second time. You know, we're using those cameras as a pre-screening, but then if someone is flagged as a higher temperature, then we would screen them with a normal thermometer just to make sure we have an issue or not have an issue.
So what's the process after that? Because some kids may come to school, as most of us pre-COVID would go to work, and we may have a cold, but we still think we can power through it and get to work or get to school. What if a student just has a cold?
The nurses will go through. They have a whole list of protocols that they have to determine what should happen medically. And they'll be in consultation with the parent to decide what should occur. So it would really be on a case-by-case basis. There's not a magic formula that, you know, one thing triggers everything. I mean, so I think that, you know, we have some cases where there are some kids that have, you know, run a little warmer on normal days. So
sure, yeah.
You know, and so, you know, the nurses, I have great faith in our nursing staff here. They will be the ones to be in touch with the families to talk through things and make decisions on what they feel is medically best on a case-by-case basis.
So just because you may have a student with a temperature does not mean that you're COVID testing there on site.
Yeah, we are not COVID testing anyone on our school district facility. We don't have that capacity or that technology. So really, it's a matter of communicating with parents and making decisions right for that student and the rest of the student body.
The temperature cameras, was that in the budget or was that paid for through the state?
That was through the state, through one of the grants.
Okay, through one of the grants. Okay. And let me ask you about the budget, if you don't mind, because I would think that the budget is going to be affected in some way. Do you expect an increase in expenditures, or do you expect some kind of savings throughout this? I mean, what are you expecting with the budget?
It's complicated because there absolutely is an increase in expenditures because of the amount of personal protective equipment we've purchased, obviously cameras. If you come into our schools, there's signage. Most of the halls are now going one way. We added almost 500 sanitation stations throughout our facilities. That all comes at a pretty substantial cost. We also offered a retirement opportunity for our teachers both in June and earlier this month because a number of staff members have personal concerns and, you know, a whole variety of reasons that they didn't feel might be safe or unsafe for them or a family member. So we have had a reduction in our labor costs because of retirements as well. So right now those costs are offsetting. So we are not in a bad budget position if all things were equal. What really concerns me about our budget is whenever I talk to folks, how many people have lost jobs or lost hours or underemployed and lost wages. At a certain point, it's not just what we budgeted to spend, it's what we budgeted to receive through revenues. We cannot anticipate that we're going to get everything we budgeted for because people can't pay if they're out of work.
How about when it comes to sporting events, not just football? You have a lot of different activities and organizations and sporting events that are a part of the budget. What does that look like? Is there a shortfall? Is there a lack of revenue? Are sports going to be doing anything? Does the band get to go anywhere? What happens with all of that?
Well, at this point, those are not budgetary decisions. They're health and safety decisions, and honestly, many of them are not our decisions. We're all eagerly awaiting to hear what the PIAA's recommendation is. They're meeting next Friday, the 21st, to determine what happens with fall sports. You know, our kids have been participating in voluntary practices over the course of last month. Participation is pretty high. I think the kids are eager to play sports, but ultimately, if the PIAA determines not to have sports, that would have an impact. It may also be they push sports back. And, you know, so there's not necessarily budgetary savings if they push things back. It's just what happened at a different time of the year. You know, the band, the chorus, the orchestra, all those kind of performances, right now it's tough because we're not allowed to have congregating groups together over 250 people outside and 25 people inside. And so, you know, our marching band is almost that size on its own.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, a lot of it really depends on the health orders in place from the state. At this point, there's not many decisions to make because there's not much that's permissible. Hopefully the situation gets better and we can do more things. I don't know if you know this or not, but I was a former band director, so I'm very passionate about getting the band kids to be able to play and our orchestra and choral kids also to perform. And, you know, in the springtime, a lot of kids lost out in the performances. I know we lost a lot in athletics as well. But kids lost a lot of opportunities in the last 6 months.
Well, I have a heart for band, too. I was in the Butler band, but we had to march up from the intermediate to go up to the high school in order to have practice. So that was back in the day, too. We had the Q-tips, so I remember that. We nicknamed those hats the Q-tips. But anyway, but I digress. Let's get back on topic. Dr. Brian White with the Butler Area School District. Let me ask you about your teachers, a couple of questions there. Since you mentioned your teachers, are you expecting any kind of teacher shortage, if you will? I know those that have already taken the retirement plans, if that's what they're choosing to do, you would already have a heads up on that. But during the school, do you think that you're going to have a shortage of subs or even full-timers?
Yes. It's an absolute concern, and it could really disrupt our operations. You know, we typically have we use a substitute service to provide substitutes for us. And last year we added 10 what we call building-based subs, where they reported every day to our school district because we knew we'd have at least that many openings. We have already increased that to 24 building-based subs across the district so we can try to fill absences as they occur. But we believe there's going to be a general shortage of subs across the region. And talking to my colleagues in other school districts, that seems to be the case for them as well. So, yeah, I am very concerned about staffing. It could very easily disrupt our ability to operate normally.
I was in a conversation, of course, someone was trying to relay the concept that they thought was going to happen, so I'll try to relay it to you and see if you could clarify this. They were talking about teachers teaching what we consider the specials in school, mm-hmm. and they were talking about a teacher possibly being in one location with the class, but another class would be, in a sense, virtually joining them with an assistant in that class. And I thought, I'm going to ask Dr. White, what is that?
Yeah,
what are they talking about?
Well, we have contemplated, and that may occur at our secondary schools, but let me talk about our elementary schools, K through 6 first, because they look very different. In our K through 6 buildings, we have taken every homeroom of students and either divided in half, and so one homeroom becomes two homerooms, or we've taken two homerooms, they become three homerooms. And the idea is to have very small classes so we can have the 6 feet of social distancing. We figured out all the space to do that. We knocked out some walls to do that. We changed faculty rooms to classrooms. We changed art rooms to second grade classrooms. We're using steam rooms as regular classrooms. But we also had to figure out a way to staff it. And to staff it, we've taken our reading specialists. We've taken the special teachers, and we've assigned them to partner with a homeroom teacher. So that homeroom teacher, whose room is now split into two, has another teacher that's their partner teacher. They can go back and forth between the two rooms. So, you know, to start the school year, our specials will be self-contained through grades K through 6, meaning those teachers will be responsible for covering the material that would usually be covered in a special and any kind of activity. Our goal is once the students are in the school K through 6, they will be staying in the rooms they're in the majority of the day. Even having lunch in those rooms, they'll obviously go outside for recess. But the idea is to try to not have as much interaction as we can between the whole student population. At the secondary, our buildings are larger, and this is a much bigger challenge. We already have about 25% of our kids who have indicated they're going to do cyber learning for this year. So our student population will be smaller than normal. However, in many of our classes, the distribution of students doing cyber versus coming to school is not necessarily even. For example, many of our honor students and our AP students have indicated they're coming to school, which means some of those classes are near full, while another class might be substantially empty. So, you know, it's going to be a real challenge. We're not going to have 6 feet of social distancing in many cases. And we are really relying on students to follow the masking rule, which is if you're wearing a mask, you know, we're allowed to be under 6 feet. If you're not wearing a mask, we cannot. So if we don't have substantial compliance with masking at the secondary level, we will not be able to operate normally.
Do you think your students will take that seriously? Because I know we've been through school. You and I both have been through school at different times. When you're at that age, well, we're talking about a great span of ages there, but I'm thinking high school. You sometimes joke around. You're a kid. You know, you're a young person. You maybe not think it's as serious as maybe it is. Or maybe they're coming from a viewpoint that this isn't real, and I know there's that viewpoint out there, and I don't want to wear a mask, or I don't need to wear a mask. Then there are going to be kids who want to be able to follow that guideline. So what do you do when you're in a school like that?
Well, first of all, there are some kids that just can't even wear a mask because of a medical condition or disability. So we will try to work with those students to find a way to socially distance them in classes or find other arrangements for them. the challenge really is, just as you said, you know, there are so many belief systems around this. Some don't accept this as a medical necessity. Some really believe this is a violation of their constitutional rights in order to wear a mask. Our charge is to implement the Department of Health's orders. So if students don't wear a mask, we have to engage in social distancing of at least 6 feet. We believe most of the students who are coming back want to come back. Otherwise, they would have chosen cyber already. It's part of the reason that the secondary, we are operating the first week is what we're calling a soft return to school. In each of the buildings, the senior high school and the intermediate high school, bringing one grade level back per day for 2.5 hours to review all the safety procedures, review the mask guidelines, try to get everyone to understand and respect that we need everyone to work together to actually be open as a physical school. If we don't work together, we're not going to be open very long.
And not only that, not only the thought process of not being open very long, but couldn't this possibly, if it doesn't work, if people don't take it seriously, couldn't this turn into another school year where a lot of kids don't have prom and graduation and all of the ceremonies that we all expect when we're in high school?
Most certainly. Yeah, I mean, everything could be jeopardized if folks don't work together.
I could keep you here for a long time, but I know I got to let you go here in a couple minutes. Dr. Brian White with the Butler Area School District. Of course, we're talking with all the school districts as we go throughout this week and a couple of days next week. And so Butler's kicking this conversation off. And I just want to ask you a couple more questions before I do let you go. One is about busing. Again, what are your thoughts on that? It kind of goes along the same questioning as the social distancing and the masks. How do you handle that?
So we do not have the capacity to do social distancing on our buses. A normal year, we're short on bus drivers and often can't get more buses. So we're stretching that capacity normally. We did ask parents to start to get an indication of people who weren't planning to drive their kid to school to get some sense of that. And it's a hair under 1,000 parents have already indicated, hey, my kid's not going to be on the bus this year. So mm-hmm. that will take a little pressure off the system. But we are requiring a mask on the buses. If a student can't wear a mask, then we're going to try to work through what alternative we have, because we might have to loop a bus through or have them on a route that's different that doesn't have as many kids so we can socially distance them. But again, that has to go on a case-by-case basis. To not wear a mask in school, according to the Department of Health, a parent guardian must provide a doctor's note stating that the child cannot wear a mask because of a medical reason. So, now there's a whole another piece with disabilities through our special education department, but for students that are not disabled, you really need that medical excuse. So once we get that medical excuse, we're starting to work with the parents to understand, you know, the context of how much can they wear a mask, cannot wear a mask at all, can they wear it on the bus,
yeah.
and all those kinds of things. So, it can...
I feel for you all. I really
challenges.
Feel for all of you. Absolutely. It doesn't matter the age. Doesn't matter if you're a teacher, the superintendent. I just feel for all of you in this. I do think of the younger kids, though, with these masks. I'll be curious to see if they know what they're supposed to do and they stick right to it. Or are they just going to get fidgety with these masks and take them off? And that's just, it's going to be something that you all have to look at as well, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it'll be a lot of learning for us as we start teaching this year.
Last question for you, Dr. White. I know that the schools, as I've talked to many organizations and county commissioners and throughout the past many months, that the schools have been talking with one another. You're all trying to get through this. I know you specifically talked to Seneca Valley. Your school districts are of comparable size, if you're comparing all of the districts within the county. How is that helpful for you to talk with Seneca Valley? And what specific concerns did both of you have that maybe the other districts don't have to worry about?
Yeah, we do engage in extensive collaboration with Seneca Valley because of the similarities of our district, but we're also very different districts in some ways as well. First of all the superintendents in Butler County meet at least once a week virtually, sometimes twice a week. Once a week, we are meeting with the county commissioners, county emergency services, representatives in Butler Hospital and UPMC, and we have some really robust conversations about understanding what is coming from the state, what is happening in our community, and what is the best thing for all of our children. And I have to tell you, that started in March. Those conversations have been invaluable in guiding us, because I am not a public health official, and neither are my colleagues. And we'll all be the first ones to tell you that. So we do look to the expertise of the physicians in the community, you know, and Dr. Love at Butler Hospital has been an absolute blessing to this entire county to provide us insights as to what is going on. But the collaborations, you know, it runs a lot deeper than just sharing information. We have had our school nurses collaborate across the county. The superintendents obviously are collaborating. We're sharing information. We're sharing documents. We're sharing things that all of us might not have the capacity to develop on our own, but together we're trying to get things in the best position for all of our students. So I think that, you know, it really has been helpful. It's been helpful in identifying resources. You know, when we were all scrambling to find PPE, when someone would find a vendor, we were able to get some things shared with everyone, get pricing, might do a little bit better at times. So I'm very proud to work with the colleagues I do across the county. And obviously, as I mentioned, Dr. Vitale and myself work a lot together because of the similarities of our district.
Dr. Brian White with the Butler Area School District. We're all kind of holding our breath, but yet excited that school's here, nervous that school's here. Any final thoughts that you would like to share with us as we get into the school year here?
We're hopeful, but we're watching the data every day. And at some point, we might have to make decisions that we're not going to be all thrilled with. But right now, we're planning for a full reopen of our school district. And then we will adjust if we need to. I really am extremely appreciative of all the faculty and staff and their efforts to put things in a position to be back and ready for our kids. You know, and again, I know our parents have been extremely patient and flexible with us, and I'm very grateful for that as well.
Dr. Brian White, Butler Area School District, my best to you as you go forward in the next many days, weeks, and months. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.